This is your number one.
Why do you think this quote, "Na woman dey drive," why do you think it is an unspoken rule?
Another perspective is that I feel it comes from the place of lack of patience.
It's just the societal way that people have already reason women to be like already. There are many times that women drive way, way better than men.
I want us to separate this superiority thing that you're talking about.
Men are always in a haste to bypass rules, while women will always want to follow rules.
If you're learning how to drive, you're expected to get your learner's permit, which will cover you for a period of 3 months.
Flick Play is the latest feature on the Flickro app.
You're listening to only the best
automotive podcast in Nigeria.
I hope we've all had a successful and productive week so far. So we first today talking about CNG and, you know, the talks that have been going on around CNG. We have Mr. Jide Pratt to, you know, shed more light on this subject, because lately that has been the trend among private sectors, among the government. This has been the trend. So we've brought Mr. Jide Pratt once again, you know, to shed more light on this and, you know, walk us through the whole thing. So welcome, Mr. Jide.
Thank you very much. I think I've been introduced. My name is Jide Pratt. More often than not, a lot of people just call me by my initials, JP. I spent about 20 years or thereabout, a bit more in the downstream oil and gas sector. I currently manufacture LED and solar lights with a company called Iona, and I'm also the country manager for a company called Trade Group. We're like a digital platform, and what we do is basically try and supply petrol, particularly to retail stations, using our app. So I think that's who I am in a nutshell.
All right. That's great. Wonderful profile you have there, Mr. Jide. Okay, so into the conversation proper. So lately, I think following the removal of fuel subsidy and how inconsistent fuel price has been, and this inconsistency, the fuel price has been on the high side, I think people are still paying towards CNG conversion, even though government, so there has been, like, you know, news here and there about the government also involving themselves on CNG. I'd also like you to, you know, walk us through what is CNG, the conversion process, and, you know, all that.
Okay, thank you very much. And just to get straight into it, I think for some perspective, like you rightly said, there was a statement on the 29th of May, 2023, when the new president was sworn in, when he said subsidies. So after that, what happened was that there became a lot of conversations and discussions around how do we make things better in terms of the full brunt of the price not going to the public. That started a lot of conversations on CNG. So the first thing is that, what is CNG? It's just what you call natural gas in a compressed form. So the acronym CNG comes from compressed natural gas. You might have also heard that Nigeria as a country is actually more of a gas nation than an oil nation. This means to say that we actually have more reserves of gas than we have of oil. But some of it has just not, let me say a lot of it has not yet been tapped. Now, once you compress natural gas from when it comes out of the floor, the aim of compressing it is so that you can store a large volume of it in a refined space or in a container. So assume, and let's use the live example of water. Sometimes there's no running water. So what you want to do is that you want to put water in a large container and save it. The difference between that and compressed natural gas is that you compress that natural gas so that it can take more volume. So it's just like saying you're freezing ice, so that when it defrosts, you can have kept more in terms of ice form. That became a mode of trying to say, okay, let us move from fossil fuel reliance, PMS, gas oil. Not of, but apart from the fact that in terms of, let me say, cleanliness and greenhouse gas emissions, you emit more from diesel and petrol than you do from gas. CNG is gas. CNG is lighter than air. So that said, with the definition, I will move to maybe the safety. CNG, compressed natural gas, is not LPG. It's very important that I make that definition. LPG is liquefied petroleum gas. So that's what we use for power. CNG is compressed natural gas. So it's not used for cooking. It's used for things like transportation. So it becomes an alternative fuel to petrol or diesel.
Countries that seem to have it, I'm sure you must have heard, Nigeria is about the 9th or 10th largest producer of gas in the world. So what that means is that we have gas in massive quantities. So it's the utilization that we need to get to. Conversations started spinning around. And if we move to CNG, then what it is that that means that we're reducing the amount of money people use to move from point A to B. Be it buses, be it trucks, be it cars. It really doesn't make any difference. But it's that implementation stage that I think we're still at the moment. I must say again, it's relatively safe because it's methane. CNG is more of methane gas. But like I said, because it's lighter than air, if PMS or AGO spills, it will stay on the ground and it sparks the first animation. CNG, on the other hand, if it spills, it's odorless. But because it's lighter than air, it will dissipate into the environment. So I think that's a good way to start the introduction into this conversation, and I'll wait for your chance and you let me know what you next do.
All right. Thank you very much. That was really insightful and holistic. All right. So now that car owners and, you know, private and government sectors are tilting towards CNG conversion, what are like the pros and cons of CNG conversion? Like, before people start to convert, or people that have, you know, intentions of converting, what do you think they should be aware of? Can you like shed more light on what they should be aware of before converting? I know that CNG conversion has quite a lot of benefits and, you know, advantages, but I also believe that, you know, there's something that they should also be aware of, you know, a disadvantage, even if it's the very least 1%. So what are like the pros and cons of CNG conversion? What should car owners be aware of before converting?
Thank you again. One of the things that I always tell people is that when you're looking for a benefit, you must look for a benefit that outweighs the... So let's use the pros and cons, like you said. What are the pros and what are the cons? If you're someone who loves to travel and you need your trunk space or your boot space, then that is one major disadvantage for you. Why do I say this? Because a CNG cylinder needs to be fit into your boot so that that is what you're going to use to fill. You can't fit it where your fuel tank is. It's not underneath your car. It's going into your boot. So the first thing you must be aware of, you will lose trunk space or boot space. That's number one. Now, number two, you will find out that if you drove around, let's say you were going from Lagos to Ibadan, you will probably count 40 to 50 retail stations, if not more. With CNG, what you'll find out is that you probably not even count one. And why do I say that? That's because as it is now, we do not have nearly enough CNG retail outlets. That's the second thing. The third thing is that there is a cost to CNG conversion. If you already own a car that is powered by diesel and is powered by petrol, you're going to have to spend money to get that the conversion kit fit into your car. So those are three clear things you must be aware of. However, I would say this. Those are the things you must be aware of. But what are the benefits to you? Number one, if you buy a converter and fix into your car, it means that you have two options of fueling your car. You have CNG and you have petrol. It's not an either or. You can either do use CNG, and if you don't have CNG, you move to your petrol. So one major advantage is that it's a dual purpose. CNG gives you a dual option. It gives you two options. With your petrol or diesel right now, you have just one. And if there's a scarcity on any, you can't go anywhere. If you don't have supply, you can't fuel. But with CNG, while it's there, it means that you have two options. It's a dual purpose fuel. The second thing is that from the safety point of view, those cylinders are highly pressurized. So, and the way it is, it's very, very, you have a seldom chance of a leakage, a very low chance of a leakage because of how the cylinders are. And the safety concern is that if your petrol cylinder leaks and there's a spark, that's an immediate fire. With CNG, if it leaks, like I said, it's lighter than air, so it dissipates into the air. So in terms of spark, safety, you're safer for it. Then the most important point I tell everybody is the cost. If I had to give a rough estimate now, I'd probably say that if we had to do CNG, which is normally in kilograms, if you had to do it on a per liter basis, I think petrol now in Lagos, we buy about 5.96, 6.10. If you were buying CNG, let's say on a per liter basis, you'd probably be buying at about 320, 360. So what does that do? That's automatically giving you savings of 50% for the same mileage. I hope we're clear up to that one. But the point now is this. Assuming I wanted to go to Abuja from Lagos, if I fueled my car in Lagos, I could probably get to Akure and fuel again. With CNG, the problem now that we still have is that we do not have enough CNG retail outlets. I give you an example. In India, they have over 7,000 retail outlets for CNG. So it also means that in terms of stations being available, in terms of refuel points, they've gotten past that. Places like India, places like Pakistan, places like Brazil, they have a lot of CNG vehicles because they built that infrastructure over time. What do I think the way forward is for someone like us in Nigeria? We have to get aggressive. The first thing is that for people to convert with the kits, we must have centers that people have been trained. And this thing is not hard. You just train someone who trains the trainer. So if I say I want a franchise of 5 retail outlets, I've got the training. Then all I need to do is go and train the staff for those 5 outlets. And then we deploy technology. And what is the technology? Conversion kits. These are things you buy and then you retrofit into the cars. What is the second thing you need to have at the station outlet is that you must have a cylinder. It's normally stored in what you call cylindrical tanks. But like I said, because it's compressed, you could take a large volume. So I think that might be a few things in terms of the pros. And then one other thing I'd also see is that you find out that your service mileage on your cars will be longer. Because you're not burning any fossil fuel, you're burning gas. So in terms of the combustion, in terms of the dissipation of energy, it's much, much cleaner. So that could be an additional benefit. Thank you.
Wow. All right. That was a lot. Thank you. Okay. Now, those few points from what you mentioned, the trunk space. Did you know that I used to think that the gas will be maybe they'll find a way around where you have the engine and create space and all of that. So that simply means that if I don't have enough space in my trunk, then once I fit in the gas cylinder, it's automatically not useful again. I don't know if you get my point. So when there is a gas in my trunk space, can I still like put load? Okay, in the event that I have space, right? Mm-hmm. And I put my gas and I like fit in the gas cylinders. Is this safe? Is it advisable to now still put maybe extra things with the trunk? Like in the trunk rather, can it still accommodate like extra luggages or extra items alongside the gas, or the trunk is completely useless? Like it cannot serve its purpose anymore. I don't know if you like get what I'm trying to say.
I understand your question 100%. Let's put it this way. Assuming that you could put 40 items in your boot or in your trunk without anything in it, take it that you will not be able to put more than 25 or 30, depending on the configuration of the cylinder. So let's say that means that let's assume you lose 1/4 of the space. So you still have 3/4 to play around with. In terms of safety, don't forget that we said two things about CNG, that it is lighter than air. In the case of a liquid, it's not going to cause a spark because it's lighter than air, so it will dissipate into the air. There's always obviously more air around in the environment compared to your cylinder or your tank. That's number one. The second thing is the fact that the casing of most of those cylinders, they're made out of steel. They're steel casing or reinforced aluminum, depending on what the end you use. So you need to have to just take a hammer or maybe an explosion kit to try and blow it open. So you can put things in your car, you can put your bags, you can put wood. It doesn't matter what you put. It will take it. But don't forget that in terms of space capacity, assume you would lose 25% of what you have. But what you find out is that you live in a country where people commute more within a state than outside a state. So a typical example, if you live in Lagos, if you live in Dos, if you live in Kaduna, you probably go to work in the morning and you're back home in the evening. You hardly find people like if you live in the US where people are making regular trips where they're driving, you know, they're driving 200 kilometers on a daily basis. You know, and as far as they're concerned, it's really, it's not a big deal to them. But even then, you find out that more often than not, when you commute between cities for vacation, you probably are just putting two trunks. Your two trunks will still fit into that location. It will not stop anything. And the safety is still 100%. You don't need to be scared that because the gas cylinder might blow, I can't put anything. It doesn't work that way. It is a very, very safe one. For other perspective, it is even safer than having LPG. If you went to Ghana, There's a time I used to live in Ghana, and 60% of the taxi drivers, they didn't have petrol tanks. They had even closed up their petrol tanks, and they were using LPG. They provide petroleum gas. That's what most of the taxis in Accra do. So they drive it to an LPG station, they go ahead and fill their tanks, and they move on. But LPG is more flammable than CNG, and that is because it's a denser gas compared to CNG. I hope that makes some sense.
Yes, it does. Okay. All right. So you know that you mentioned that even if the CNG leaks, you know, it will not create a spark. So at what point, I mean, this is gas, right? At what point do you think, at what point can it, you know, blow up? Does it mean that because of the nature of the gas, right, it's not going to blow up, or is it, since it's less flammable and all that? I mean, this gas we're talking about, what can possibly make it blow up? I know, going to the fact that if it was, you know, the other kind of gas, once it starts to leak, there's a smell, right? But for CNG, I think it doesn't even have a smell. So you can't even tell when it is, when it starts to leak, Abby. So my concern now is that, I know you said it's less flammable, even when it leaks, it dissipates into the air and all of that, but it's still gas. So at what point can it blow? Because I know that I've spoken to a friend of mine that has a car, and I asked him that people are converting to CNG, you know, go follow convert, and then he goes, they make it, they drive one day, and then this thing will just blow up in his face. And I'm like, oh my god. And no, I, you know, I tried to like tell him that this is what it is, but to be very honest, I'm in Nigeria and I have my concern. So at what point, it's still gas, sir, so at what point can that thing blow up? That's what I really want to know, you know, from what you said, that it will not blow and all that. At what point, please? Thank you.
So the way it is, let's use an example of propane. Yeah. So propane is a gas. But in terms of the things called flammability ranges, yes. So it means that if you have a temperature of, let's say, and I'm just going to use a base example, let's say that propane will ignite at a temperature of 30 degrees. With natural gas, with methane, even though methane is a more flammable gas, you'll find that compressed natural gas is less flammable. So it probably would not ignite to, let's say, 100 degrees. This is a raw example. So you find out that in terms of gas, you have gases that ignite at lower temperatures than some others. So if we ask the question, at what point will it ignite? It has to be at much higher temperatures than your car boot can provide. So question for you again. You are probably not going to put inside your car boot. You are probably not going to fry the back inside your car. So, no matter how hot it is, you'll find out that the highest temperatures we seem to have in Nigeria will be somewhere in the north. 40 degrees, right? It's never really in that. 42 degrees. And it will not ignite at those places, at those temperatures. So, you need to be moving towards much higher temperatures to make it unsafe. Can you hear me clearly?
Yes, I can.
Okay. So, you need to be at much higher temperatures for it to inflame. Because its own maximum and minimum ranges are higher. And that's what I mean, LPG, think about it. We all use cooking LPG. A small spark for LPG and your whole car is carbon. The whole house is gone. So even in Ghana, what you find out is that even those guys who use LPG, the cases they use for those LPG cylinders in schools are very, very high pressure metal, and they're dense metal. So that if there's a spark on the outside, the gas still does not escape. Because you know you're going to get into bombs. You're going to get into bad road and everything. So they encapsulate it and they keep it in a space where it's easy for it not to be too rigid and touchy. But for methane, for CNG, you need to get a high temperature for that risk that they're talking about to actually happen. And like you said, it doesn't have a smell. So, but it is, even though it doesn't have a smell, it just goes into the air and it's much, much, much safer than LPG.
Okay, so what you're trying to say now is as long as the vehicle performs as it should, then there's a very low chance that it will just blow up.
No, I will rephrase that by saying that the chances of it blowing up are very low as long as it's not exposed to extremely high temperatures.
All right, okay. Yeah. That's clarifying enough. Thank you very much. Okay, you also made mention of petrol and CNG coexisting. So do you mean that in the event that I want to convert, I cannot completely like the petrol system cannot completely be taken out, right? It can just be there, but I don't necessarily have to use it. I can just keep running on CNG conversion, even though I know that that's not wise, knowing that we have limited CNG stations, and that's why it's an alternative fuel for now. So you're trying to, does that mean that it can coexist? And can I decide to just completely take out the petrol system in my car, or it has to be there? Does it boil down to choice, or is something that has to be there?
Okay, I mean, look at it this way. If we look at it, that cars that we are produced now all have petrol, diesel, or electricity options. That's number one. So let's leave out the electric cars. The electric cars options do not come with any fuel tank. But if your car already comes with a fuel tank, and because we have talked about the fact that we do not have enough CNG meter out of that cost, it will not be advisable to remove your petrol tank, even though if you decide to, you can. But what it means is that the chances of you getting stuck in terms of if you went on a 1,000 kilometer ride, what happens if you can't get CNG now 1,000 kilometers that you're using? You will get stuck. So it's safer and it's better to keep the advantage of it being a 12-hour. So you keep your tank as it is. If you decide that for 1 month I don't want to use petrol, that's fine. But for me, it makes more sense to keep it as it is until we get to the stage in Nigeria. Therefore, every 100, 150 kilometers you drive, you come across a change. Yeah. At that point, then the question is, what do I need my tank? But I think it's still too premature for people to want to go the route of saying, I'm going to use only CNG and not use petrol at all. That's what I would say.
Okay, thank you very much. All right, so I think that's clear enough for me. If you have any questions, please, you can start taking note of your questions. After my next question for Mr. Jide Pratt, we'll be taking questions. Okay, so Mr. Jide, can car owners expect any impact on vehicle performance or power when using CNG instead of, you know, traditional fuels? Is there anything they should expect? Does it reduce the lifespan of the engine, or does it increase it? Or, you know, because I know that earlier you talked about mileage, and that's an impact. And, you know, thankfully it's on the good side, where, you know, your car covers less than mileage, or something that you mentioned concerning mileage earlier. So what are there other impacts that car owners should expect by converting to CNG?
Okay, so you remember that when we were talking, like you rightly said, I mentioned the fact that in terms of your oil change, so we service our cars at certain mileages. Because we're using petrol, we need to change our engine oil. You find out that the combustion using fossil fuel, yes, is not as, and I'll use the word, as efficient as using gas. So if gas is powering your engine, pushing your pistons and everything, then there's less oil moving around in your pistons. So what you find out is that your service times in terms of kilometers, if you were servicing, let's say, every 100 kilometers, this is just the rule of thumb, you probably might end up with CNG. You probably might not need to service the 1,000. Because you see, gas is a cleaner fuel any way you look at it. So when you put gas into the combustion mix, it is cleaner and more optimal than if you were using petrol or diesel. In fact, diesel would be the least optimal in terms of efficiency. So what you find out is that if you convert into CNG, your service times are longer. That saves you money because it means that you have to buy less engine or shall I say you have to buy engine or less frequently. You are not taking away your engine, don't forget. Your engine stays as it is. But that motion of combustion, pistons moving, it's going to be much more efficient using gas as compared to using KMS or diesel. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. So does this mean that, you know, with CNG conversion, it just basically reduces, you know, maintenance cost and regular visits to the mechanic, like you said, for oil changes and, you know, all of that? Maintenance will still go on with CNG conversion, right? But yes, not just as much as you would have with traditional fuel.
Not as frequently. So what it means is that two things, your mileages, your drive mileage comes increase. And don't forget the cost per liter also, if you look at what we've compared. So you find out that you're spending less money on fueling your car because it's about 40 to 50% cheaper than using petrol. Now with petrol going up now, I mean, it's something that people should consider. And just to add to that, you know that recently there was a conversation where NATO was going on strike. Now, NATO is the National Association of Road Transport Companies. Why were they going on strike? Because the cost of diesel per liter has become much, much higher. So if someone is going from Lagos to Abuja as a petrol tank driver and he's using 1,000 liters, 1,000 liters then, if he bought diesel at 600, you understand, he was buying at 600 a liter. It was much, much less. Now he's buying at 1,200 per liter. So he's basically using 1.2 million naira to buy 1,000 liters of diesel to make a trip to Abuja. Where did the compensations and confusion come in? It was being paid the old rates by people who use them. So the way it works in downstream is that, you see, every time you drive to a petrol station to buy petrol, a BRV, a vehicle or tanker, a BRV is an office, a BRV comes to deliver product to that. But for him to get to that time, while he loads at the depot, he has to buy diesel to power his car or to power his truck. So if the cost doubles, then automatically at a certain point, he's going to go into a loss position. So that is how that works. So a lot of people have spoken with NATO and they need for NATO to find a lasting solution to conversions to CNG. It helps NATO. It helps greenhouse gas emissions for the environment. And it also helps the final cost that is getting people out. So these are things that I think must be put in conversation as we go along.
All right. That's actually very correct. So, like, how much is CNG sold? How is it sold? I know for fuel is per liter, right? So, for CNG, how is it sold? And what's, like, the price, you know, estimates for CNG?
So, I got the first part of the question. I didn't get what for CNG. What's the last part of the question?
I said that how is CNG sold? Because I know for fuel, you know, okay, it's sold in liters per liter. So, CNG, how is it sold? And like, what's the price estimates? You know, just for some of us to know the gap, the price difference between CNG and fuel, and how much, you know, how much it is worth it, how well it is worth, you know, converting to CNG. Just want to know, is it really worth it? Is the price difference enough for me to, you know, alter my vehicle's modification and all of that? So what's like the price estimate for CNG and how is it sold?
Okay, as we speak today, like I think I mentioned it before, CNG right now will go for between 300 and 15 naira. And what I'm going to do, let's just keep it at liter per liter. There's a conversion of CNG in kilograms to liter. There's normally an exchange, based on the density, there's an exchange mechanism for that. But let's not even get into that. Assuming you were buying 1 liter of petrol, you're buying 1 liter of CNG. You'll buy 1 liter of CNG today at about 340 to 390. That's how much you buy. Now, some things affect distribution. So, assuming that I had CNG in Lagos and I wanted to go and sell it in Kano, whatever that cost, remember that we're saying 340 in Lagos because the CNG is here with me. But if I had to transport it to Kano and that cost is an additional 20 naira per liter for the CNG, then it means that when I get to Kano, instead of 340 to 380, I will do 360 to 400. Every time you go to buy CNG, it is coming to you in a normal dispensing pump, just like the same way you buy petrol in the pump. But that pump is tied to a gas cylinder. So the gas cylinder has a needle, the pump also has a gas needle. So you don't see it running. If you drop into a CNG station, if they didn't tell you what CNG, you will not know if you don't know about CNG. You probably will not even see those gas cylinders because they put those cylinders, gas cylinders behind the little lamp. So that's the differential that you will see. So if you find out, for instance, let's assume that you fill your tank. If your tank is, do you use 100 liters? Your tank is 100 liters and you're paying 600 naira per liter. Then it means that you're falling at 60,000. If you go to CNG, then it means that you're falling at 38,000. If it's 310, if it's 340, you're falling at 38,000. Hello?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay,
so I mean the price difference, before I go on, please, we're taking questions from Mr. Jide. So please, if you have any questions, kindly indicate. Thank you. Okay, so that means the price difference is a lot, right? And in my opinion, if I had a car, it's definitely worth the conversion because from the analysis you just gave, I think that's over like 20,000 naira difference. So is there a reason why, or can you share with us maybe concerns of individuals, Nigerians, why they are not converting to CNG, I know that maybe the awareness is not so much. People have fears. Like my friend I mentioned, is scared of driving and the gas blows up. Because, I mean, it's a really juicy alternative. It's really compelling because I don't even have a car. And from all you've mentioned, I'm already, you know, wild. Like, are you serious? So are there, what are the concerns that is restricting people from adopting this alternative fuel option?
Okay. So there, and let me put it clearly. The first concern that you said, and you've answered that question aptly well. Years back when we were trying to, I used to work in Rwanda a while ago, really long while ago, and I was in LPG. So when we went to the rural areas to try and sell camping gas cylinders to people in the rural areas, their concern and fear was that this gas cylinder can just explode. So the first thing is this. People need to be aware. People need to be educated on the pros and cons. Safety that needs to be involved. That is the first. Ignorance is a very, very difficult place to bring out someone from, unless there's an understanding. So the first thing, like it actually said, is education, awareness. It's to choose to tell people what it is, how it is, and why. With understanding what people become and remain about. That's number one. The second thing, like I said, remember I said if we drove to Ibadan from where we are, we're likely going to meet 50 to 100 PMS stations. We will not see any CNG station between here and there. And that is because the government has not yet found a way, in my opinion, to expand the CNG fleet. So remember what I said about India? Places like India and Pakistan, they have over 7,000 CNG stations. So people yes. are skeptical because if they get on the road and they cannot refuel, then it's a problem. What do I normally say to these people? I also say it's not a problem. If you fly in Lagos, try to wait and think. Don't forget, remember you were saying, should we remove our petrol energy? No, we're not going to remove it. So we'll continue the journey from where our petrol energy can start.
Right.
Because the awareness is not yet everywhere. Then the third and final point is the cost of conversion. If you want to convert, and I can't even give an ideal rate now, because the kits before used to cost somewhere around 250,000 to 400,000. However, you know that the exchange rate has gone to a totally lopsided in the last few weeks. So I can't tell you what those prices are. So the third and final point is that where is someone going to get, let's even say it's 500,000 naira. In this time, who has 500,000 naira just lying about to go and buy conversion? What is the solution to that? We must find out that there must be banks that are willing at almost zero interest to finance this thing for a period of up to 24 to 48 minutes. So you now find out that someone that needs to pay 500,000, if I'm going to pay it over 4 years, and I'm going to have it at 0 or 2%, then it means that donor agencies that are helping Nigeria, we need to be able to piggyback those amounts into retail spending, into retail lending, but in a way that it is almost 0%. If you have a bank app, there should be such a way to CNG conversion, apply for loan. All they'll do is the same way they'll do a KYC check if you can take a normal loan. But this time, it's not a commercial loan. This is a development loan. So we need to get to that stage. I can log on to my app, click on CNG conversion, see the percentage is 1% or 2%. Because these are donor agency funds. The bank should not make money on it. And based on that, I'm now ready to say, okay, I'm paying 6,000. I'm paying 10,000. And of course, we scale this amount salaries. And that's how we'll get this thing done. The government will have to take a hit and do some for public transportation. Because don't forget, the cost of food also goes up more often than not. Because we have diesel trucks moving food trucks or petrol trucks. So that affects the price of transportation to get it to the market. So if you convert the fuel also at those levels, get the states involved, get the local government involved, but do it in a way that there's probity, not like our humanitarian crisis that we seem to have. And the only way you can drive this is data. I hope that makes some sense.
Yes, that makes a whole lot of sense. All right. For the cost of conversion, you already gave like a possible solution to that. But I think that, or don't you think that, as opposed to banks, you know, wanting to give these loans, you know, Nigerians will always be Nigerians and they'll always be defaulted. There are people that even if you give them 20 years to pay that money, they'll still struggle with it. Don't you think that government should like play a larger role, maybe subsidize rates or a 50% slash or something, because in as much as bank loans, that sounds okay, but people may still struggle with covering the cost no matter how long you give them. So like, what possible role do you think that government can also play in this cost of conversion? I know that for CNG stations, they are already trying. I mean, I think one opened in Ibadan recently, another in Abuja, even another in Oron very much recently, I think towards the end of last year. So I think for that, it's coming up gradually. I mean, for a nation that being used to depend on this source of fuel, it could get better. So what roles do you think that government can also play in facilitating the adoption of CNG in Nigeria? Because I know we are way behind in this. Go on, thank you.
Okay. So this is the thing I would say. If you're going to convert to be able to save money, then it must come at a cost. What do I think the government should do? I think the government should be transparent in saying that, look, this is how much we have gotten from the donor agency, and this is how we're going to deploy it. But the point is this: if someone is going to bring conversion kits and I'm going to use it, then it means that while I'm saving on fuel, I'm using it for a business that I do. So if I go to a taxi driver and I say, okay, Mr. A, how much do you take daily in terms of how much do you make? And he says, okay, every day is 5,000. Then what we need to do is that, and I'm going back to the banks, because they can profile customers. It doesn't have to be a commercial bank. It can be a development bank. It can be a development bank is what I'm trying to say. But it can also be a microfinance bank. But what it is that in that 500 that he's doing, it must be profiled in such a way that if he was going home every day with 500, he's going home with 4,000. So that you don't have a loan. And that is what I'm saying. The government must drive this so that the interest must be zero because it's a developmental project. But what does the government do? It means that the donor agencies that are giving the federal government this money, they want to see that money is used in the right way. So it means that from the government side, there must be data to profile the people. If you give someone who does no job, who has no means of living, if you give that person a development loan, take it from what me. There's no gain thing. That person is not going to pay that, that loan back, because the willingness might be there, but the ability is not. The government's aim in this is that whatever those kids are coming in, let it be donor agencies. The government must look away from taxes on import duties on the things because they're development. The government must be transparent to say that, look, this is the amount coming. These are the states this is going to. And the government must handle it as a federal project alongside the state so that the state does implement. Not that you hand over the money to the state, then it gets missing. Hand it over to the local government and it gets missing again. The government's role in this should be just create an enabling environment for people that know what they're doing in terms of that fund and then give you a report on how it is deployed. And set a time frame agenda. So if we say, like you rightly said, there's one in the battle, if we now say that there are two sides of this divide, we need to give loans to the people who are going to use it in their cars, conversion case, that is one. But don't forget, we also have to build retail outlets. So I will take it to the people who already own retail outlets as well. I say, look, I want to give you this government loan. Maybe it's going to be at 4%. If it's 4% that we are giving, it means that you cannot charge more than the amount of 5%. At your retail outlets once you're done. So what that means is that you're developing them alongside those people who will bring in their own money. The stock exchange also has to look for products that are, let me use the word renewable, or products that are green. So that, I mean, people can now also buy and invest in the stock exchange in these different businesses. And make don't think a major point is to create what is an enabling environment for every other thing to thrive. On the bank side, 0 to 1%, but we must profile the people who are gainfully doing something. If I'm running a generator, for instance, let's assume I was running a generator on CNG, then it means that at my barber shop, at my hair salon, at my place where I sold it, there's an amount that I am making daily. This place must be put into data, because if they're not, that money is just. I hope that makes some sense.
Yes, it does make a lot of sense. All right. Okay, I think that clears the air a bit. That helps. Thank you. All right. Before my final question, looking like you don't have any, our listeners don't have questions. I think you have been more than clear enough. So for my final question, I just want to know, right? Let's assume that the cost of conversion is around 1 million now, owing to the, you know, dollarizing and all of that. This 1 million, does it, you know, accommodate conversion for all kinds of cars, all kinds of vehicles? So if it doesn't, or rather, should I say that, are there any specific cost efficient when it comes to CNG conversion, or it costs 1 million to convert, then 1 million can convert Toyota Corolla and also convert the G-Wagon, you know? I don't know if you, if that question is clear enough. Are there cars that are, you know, cheaper to convert, and are there cars that are more expensive to convert, or the price just covers all regardless of the kind of?
Okay, so they're different, and you know that normally, let's put it this way. If I had a 4-liter engine, if I have a 6-liter engine, if I have a 12-liter engine, it means that in the size of those engines, they're different. Do we get that point first? If we get that point first, it now means that the kit that I'm going to use for a truck can never be the same kit that I'm going to use for my 1.2-liter or 3-liter engine car. So the conversion kits are different sizes and they're based on capacity. So it means that if I'm going for a 2.0-liter engine, I can get a conversion kit that is cheaper than if I was going for a 5.0 or 5.0-liter engine. So the conversion kits have different capacities. So you understand? Now, it's just the same when you say that, how many liters do you want in your fuel tank? A fuel tank can have 40 liters. A fuel tank can have 50 liters. A fuel tank can have 100 liters. However, the tanks that you're going to fit in those cars, will they be the same size? The answer is no. The engine size, the size of the tank is what will determine what size of tank goes in. It is the same application for conversion kits. You can have a conversion kit where the gas that you want to put in it, for instance, let's say 50 liters and it weighs 48 kilograms. And I need a 48 kilogram tank. One other car might say, look, the capacity is 70. I need a 75 kilogram tank. So there are different conversion kits for different cars. But specifically, where do I think we need to be focusing as a country? The cars that salon that things that people drive on the day-to-day basis, the lower engine cars of 2.0, 2.5 or 3.2, that is where people should focus on. And then I also think we must focus on, like I said, transportation vehicles that do mass transit. So you're taking people from Lagos, South Nigeria, you're taking people, those, and then trucks that carry petroleum products, because everything in Nigeria is circulated around petroleum. So I hope that's clear.
Yes, yes, very much clear. Thank you very, very, very much. This was really insightful. So before we go, I just want to know, when it comes to conversion, right, are there like any paperwork or policies, guidelines? Because I know I've been asking this question for the longest time. Like, do you just wake up and say you want to convert your car and then you just maybe go for analysis or and then just convert your car? Are there like any paperwork? Do you know if there's any government laid down guidelines or paperwork that you have to go through before car owners can convert to CNG? Are there any processes from the government, like to be documented, not like your personal car or maybe assess the car or something? I don't know if you get what I'm trying
to
say.
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. So this is what it is. All right. Thank you. Before you go and convert your car to CNG, the first thing is that you must take it to an authorized garage. So what the presidential initiative on CNG was supposed to do was find out a roadmap and say that, look, okay, there's a company called Greenville, you're big on CNG. NIPCO, you're big on CNG. How many centers can you come up with? So what you find out is that the first thing that happens is that the government should put a framework where they appoint people who are authorized based on the fact that they have the safety and technological capacity to do conversions. That is number one. Those people will now hire what you call vendors or franchisees. So if you drive to a retail station and it has, let's say it has Adova on it. It's not Adova that owns those stations. Sometimes you have what is called company operated, company owned. That is a cuckoo. That means it's Adova that owns it and is running. But you have a company operated and dealer operated. So it's a kodo. Company owns it, but the dealer operates it as a franchise. So what it means is that the CNG initiative is also going to drive that. NIPCO can have 5 different vendors that work for them, but they've certified them, they've tested them, and they've trusted them and said, yes, these guys are okay to do conversion. So when you do, I wake up, okay, Tuesday, I made up my mind, I'm going to a conversion center. You must drive to an approved convention center. And where I think the presidential initiative is missing is if communication is not too, there needs to be more communication. This week we've done 4. This week we've done 5. This is a list of 5. If it is NIPCO, NIPCO should also broadcast it. So the first step for me on Tuesday would be to drive my car in. This is my car. They'll tell you, okay, park it here. Please start it. And then they will assess your car. Once they assess your car, then they can tell you, okay, this car is okay. You can go ahead and do the conversion. This is what we're going to use. This is the size. So you now find out that you're having a guided process with them on what needs to be done to convert your car. It won't be guesswork. An evaluation and an assessment will be done, and then from there you move to the new car. That is what we do. So when you look at places like India, they give you a schedule, and in India they'll tell you, okay, on so-so and so-so day, we're going to do 15 cars. But you find out that you've booked ahead, you've booked online, you've booked it. So you just go in at the time when it's time for yours to happen. And you go ahead. I also think, I don't know if you know this association called MEMAN, Major Energy Marketing Operation. They used to be called MOMAN before. So that encapsulates most of the former major marketers, the Owando, Total, MRS, Adova, there's 6 of them. So those guys also have a lot of retail outlets. So I think they might be very, very, let me say, important in getting these certifications technologically and HSE-wise. They need to be involved in those so that maybe with NATO, maybe IPMAN too, if they can keep the standard, so that you drive into garages that are certified. It's the same way now that you find out you have certified agents for virtually, look at DSTV. Sometimes you don't go to the DSTV office, you go to a certified agent, but it's someone that is clarified and certified. That is the same way it works with CNG. But the first point will be to drive your car to that location for it to be valid. I hope that's true.
Okay, thank you very much. I think that answers the question. Thank you so much for your time, Mr. Jide. It was really insightful. I learned a lot. Even if I don't have a car, I learned a lot. Now I can boldly educate, I can boldly educate car owners and say, okay, this is why you should do CNV and all of that. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you for the insight. So I think on behalf of the listeners, we've learned so much and we are very, very thankful. And it brings us to the end of the session. Thank you so much, everybody. And do have a lovely and productive weekend ahead. Okay, I think there's a question.
Oh, okay. Hello, is there one?
Yes, I think there is. I'm going through the thread. Okay. It's here in the thread. Just a moment, please. I think listeners, some of the listeners dropped their questions in the thread. Okay, so it says, from a mechanical aspect, how does a natural gas goes into the engine for efficient combustion? Is the natural gas going through the same nozzle like petrol, or its own chip that goes into the engine?
Okay, normally what happens is that the same line, so if you notice that the CNG fuel tank, the way they do the CNG fuel tank, they pipe it like, how will I put it, like a fuel tank. So that fuel tank would ideally push petrol through lines, through fuel lines into the engine. The CNG would also have like fuel lines. So what you find out is that your fuel line that carries PMS is not your same fuel line that is going to carry the engine. So it means they will pipe your CNG tank into the engine. Do you understand what I'm saying? So the same way you have a fuel injection is the same way you have a gas injection. So in this case, the CNG fuel tank will be the one to push high pressure gas through those fuel lines into the engine. But there's always some, it's a bit technical, but you also have a regulator, because what you don't want is that you don't want to push pressure that is higher than what the engine can take. So assume I have a tank in my coach, the line goes through a regulator, then the regulator now takes what should enter. If I have a 2-liter engine car, you find out that the petrol that passes into the cylinder is only 2 liters when it's full. It will not take 4 liters. So there's something like a regulator. So that regulator also will be attached to it. And then to dissipate the amount of what you call it CNG at the right pressure into the engine.
All right. Okay. Thank you very much. I hope that answers your question, dear listener. Thank you very much. Any other question before we go? we are ready to take your questions, or Mr. Jide is ready to take your questions. Any other questions?
Maybe if there are none, I can anchor off. I need to go into a 7 o'clock meeting.
You can
work? I'm running late for that. Actually, if there are none, maybe they can just, or there any, we can just drop it. I need to anchor into a 7:10 meeting.
All right. Okay. That's fine. Okay. Thank you very
but
much.
But anybody can drop this. You can drop this question. Since I'm following Plato, then I can just, after the meeting, try and reply to those that I can. Is that okay?
Yes. That's very thoughtful. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you very much for your time.
Yes, so in light of this, so bringing this to a close, thank you everybody, and do have a productive weekend, and we enjoy your weekend. If you're not following us, please do follow us at DarkCarFixer on Twitter, Instagram, at FlickWheel. Thank you. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. Bye.
This is your number one.
Why do you think this quote, na woman dey drive? Why do you think it is an unspoken rule?
Another perspective is that I feel it comes from the place of lack of patience.
It's just the societal way that people have already reasoned women to be like already. There are many times that women drive way, way better than men.
I want us to separate this superiority thing that you're talking about.
Men are always in a haste to bypass rules, while women will always want to follow rules.
If you're learning how to drive, you're expected to get your learner's permit, which will cover you for a period of 3 months.
Flick Play is the latest feature on the FlickWheel app.
You're listening to only the best
automotive podcast in Nigeria.